You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
I don't like kombucha, and I used to so much that I had a, what do you call it? Like a mother? Is that what they're called? Or that's bread? I had a SCOBY, and I was like making my own kombucha in the fridge for a while. But I think that it was just a reaction to when it first became a thing, when it got trendy, however many, 10 years ago, whatever it was. I was like, I'm into this trend. I love a health trend. And then I realized how expensive kombucha was. So I did it the way that you didn't have to be expensive, but it just tastes like vinegar that's spoiled.
Yeah.
And then I'm now drinking hard kombucha and I'm like, yeah, is that hard? No, that's hard kombucha.
I got it from, you know, when I go into the office, I just get snacks on snacks on snacks on snacks and weird snacks.
And you like it? You like kombucha?
I like it when it's free. I don't actually don't like it. It does taste like, this one is tasting a little vinegary to me.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it tastes like to me is vinegar that's gone bad, which I don't even know if that's a thing. Can vinegar go bad?
Yes, vinegar can. It's like wine going bad, where it turns into vinegar. Like you can go too hard on the fermentation, guys. You can ferment too hard.
I'd rather a seltzer. Like I just
1,000% would rather a seltzer. You know what's interesting though? You have a sister. You have actually three sisters.
Not to brag.
Brag about it. I only have the one. And I have a half. I have one and a half. One and a sister-in-law. But your sister is really impressive because she will eat anything as long as it's healthy. Like she will eat disgusting
liver.
Probably told the story. I walked in and she was cooking liver in like a dry pan. And I was like, you know, you can add salt and pepper to that. And she's like, I don't know what it is about me.
Most of us eat for other reasons.
I think it's like the thing is she can handle if she knows it's healthy. It's a really interesting psychological thing. If she knows it's healthy, she can eat anything. Isn't that amazing?
I'm not that way.
I'm definitely not that way. Speaking of things, like I take my pills in the morning and sometimes I gag. Which, by the way, I'm going to tell you a pro tip that I learned if anyone has a hard time taking pills. And I don't necessarily have a hard time taking pills, but it's not my like favorite thing to do.
How you pop them anally now? Is that what you're going to tell them?
Suppository. Throw it in there. Set it and forget it. I am the rotisserie showtime
rotisserie.
It'd be
so wild if you suggested that. If you were like, I found this new way to do it, you guys.
You guys,
it's crazy.
I found this new
you
way.
You don't ever right. choke.
I found this new way to get drunk, which is you don't drink it with your mouth. You put it up your asshole.
You want to try it in your booty.
Put it in your booty. No, this one is – okay, so you know the difference between a tablet and a capsule? Okay.
Yes, I do.
So a tablet, raw dog, you know, not in a plastic thing. So what you do is if you take a tablet, you put it in your mouth, and you drink water like you would. Like you tilt your chin back because gravity brings it going down. The thing about a capsule is there's air in it. And so what you do
– It floats.
So you can drink it
hope.
And you put your head down and it goes back and you can swallow it that way.
You put the water in, you do this. You look down and then you look up like that?
No, I just put it down, let it float up and just swallow. It's right there by the back.
Creepy.
But isn't that weird? I saw that and I was like, this is actually very helpful.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Try it. Hey, give it a try next time you take your medicine. Let me know what you think.
And if not, put in your booty.
Put in your booty. Do we think like when do I stop taking allergy medicine daily?
Now, enough.
You think?
You're about to fly. You're gonna be somewhere else. Your body's gonna be fine.
Okay. I just have been like taking it since Edinburgh.
What do you think? I am a doctor just because I am so healthy because I one time grew a SCOBY and I do go to the gym on Sundays.
You go to the
Sundays,
Quinn. That's a lie.
Can I tell you that my teacher on Sundays is this man named Danny, who is sassy. He's this, a pack of sass, and he's hysterical, and he calls it Sunday service, and he teaches 5 30-minute classes in a row. And he stops the class all the time to ask questions. And like, we're all doing a move. And then he's like, what's your name? What's your name? What's your name? And then somebody will be like, Sheila. And he'll be like, Sheila. And then he'll turn to the woman next to him and be like, Mimi, you know Sheila? And Mimi will be like, no. And he's like, but you've seen her before. And Mimi's like, yeah. And he goes, say hi to Sheila. Say hi to Sheila. And Mimi will be like, hi, Sheila. Like, it's so intense and funny and
weird. I really like that.
It's wild. And people are always bringing him stuff. And last week was his birthday, and there was balloons and cake and tons of shit that people had brought him. And he started one of the classes, and he goes, you see all this? You see all this? It's because it's my birthday. Nobody sang, though. None of you sang. And then everybody started singing, and he was like, oh, stop. Shut up. Shut up. And it was like, you asked us to sing.
He just starts bullying you guys. I love that.
So I'm really into Danny, and he's always going to do something unpredictable. And I love it. And it's like, I wonder when he's going to get in trouble and not be at this gym anymore, because he's doing his own stuff. He's living life in a different way. An example, last week during Pilates, we're doing scissor kicks, and he's like, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 3, 4, 5. And he grabs, he's like, makes a face. He's like looking at somebody and making like a kind of a disgusted face. Mm-hmm. And then he goes into his bag, gets out some cream, grabs some with his hand, walks over to a girl and starts putting lotion on her feet while she's doing Pilates. And then he's like, I just couldn't help it. I couldn't help it.
Does he give her a foot massage?
He's like, you're dry. You needed that. You needed that.
She was a little dry.
She was a little dry, and he couldn't watch those dry feet. Kicking scissors back and forth. He had to go fix it. Then this is a different week. This was last week he did this. We're in a class, and somebody's phone rings, and he goes to their bag and picks it up. Hello? She's in class. She'll call you back. And then he hangs up, and then he turns to the class and he goes, it was a man.
Could you imagine calling your friend? Like, would I call the police?
It was a man. I just couldn't. I mean, I was rolling. I was rolling.
I got to tell you, I almost died this week. I haven't told you yet. So I was on a train. It was September 11th, I was on the train going to the financial district for going to my office. And on the train, there was this – all of a sudden, this woman starts screaming, don't fucking look at me. Don't fucking look at me. Don't get anywhere near me. I have a gun with 6 bullets in it. I'll fucking shoot you all.
I think I've taken the train with her.
She's great. I'm not kidding. She legit – and
there's a couple people that I've had the same crazy thing with where I'm like, oh, you – I've had this breakdown happen.
Yelling in a way. Isn't that interesting? Very interesting. And it's a hard thing because I'm like – so I had a whole thing. What's funny is
– just switched cars, right?
That's what was so funny is like we're hearing – and luckily like she was 2 like seating groups away. So I wasn't – I didn't see who it was, so I could like actually kind of look.
You were like carefully counting absolutely. Who were the 6 closest people to her?
No, I didn't even see. I was like – fortunately I was able to like kind of listen and like – look around, take stock, because I was on the same side of the train as she was, but I was far away from her. And so what happened was is I like the train stops and you know that feeling where you're like, you don't want to leave in a rush because you don't want to like aggravate the person more. You know what I mean? But you also are like, I got to get the fuck out of here. So we all just kind of like stood there and everybody just like the doors opened and everybody just like got up and left and she was by herself. And then what's really crazy is that like everyone who was waiting for the train just like walked in unsuspectingly to this train.
And we were like, good luck.
And I was like, bye. And so I went, cause I just like ran to the next one and we were sitting around and it's really kind of a lovely way to meet some New Yorkers. Like I was chatting with people.
You all look at each other and you're all like,
Hey, and people were like, what a crazy debate last night. Could have used her. Like, that's what they were saying. People were just like making jokes, wow, small talk, things like that. And then what was so funny is you get to the next stop and then everybody from that car then comes to that car. Like, it's like every car, they're like, I get why that one was empty and this one was full. Because you
see an empty car, there's always a reason.
If it's too good to be true, it's because it's too good to be true. Shit's bad over there. Anyway, so it was weird. I had that moment where I was like, do I call the police? Knowing that maybe they can't handle a mental health issue. And, you know, you just have those moments in your head where you're like, clearly this is a mentally unwell person. It's a little bit of like, you know, I kind of did the whole like, I didn't call the police. I was in the train. I thought about it. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah. There was a guy like that the other day that it escalated very quickly and a group of us left. And then we all had that sweet moment that you're talking about where we all sat down and we were like, we got away.
Yeah.
But we were also like, he was so loud that we kept kind of being like, is he here again? Is he like,
yeah, I was like worried she was going to continue. Like, cause if she left, she would enter a new car is what I was worried. You're taking the train now more often. And I got to say, Quinn, you don't have the best track. And it's not you. This sounds like I'm victim blaming and I'm really not. I just think you have bad luck when it comes to the train.
I do.
Do you think I'm wrong in that? In fact. Am I speaking out of turn?
I don't, but there's nothing I can do.
No.
Some have all the luck. Unluckiness seems to follow me. I don't know. I'm just, you know, I'm crossing my fingers and
yeah, live, we'll keep love, us laugh, posted. Ride. Keep us posted. Yeah. I will be taking the car to an airport tonight. I'm leaving you for like at least 2 months.
I know.
But what else is new? What else is new? I leave you all
I'm pretty used to saying goodbye to you, if I'm honest.
I think everybody is. I think that's actually the problem is that everybody's like, okay, Carrie's leaving.
Nobody's really used to having you around. Yeah, wait. I think that's it. You're so right. Nobody's like emotionally impacted by you leaving anymore because we're like, that's the way it goes. Like anybody else was leaving for 2 months, I wouldn't even be able to wrap my mind around it. But like you leaving for 2 months, I'm like status quo.
Should I take that personally? Should I be sad about that or just like that's okay?
I think that there's no way you don't feel something, even though we don't talk about that, what I just verbalized, it has to by osmosis manifest as a feeling in you and it can't feel great. So I actually think we might have put our finger on some of the stuff that's been going on that is other than the obvious, because I think the obvious thing when you think about instability is I don't have my own place and I'm moving around all the time. That makes me feel destabilized and strange. But also, I think we're ignoring this other thing that's happening that is that in your heart and head, you're having like this weird feeling of like,
where are my people?
I'm also not, no one is used to having me as a constant in their life.
Mm-hmm. Except for me.
Yeah.
And the person I just left.
Well, you're the most important person.
Yeah.
And you can always count on you.
Yeah, but you can't. I need community. I need that. I mean, I feel like what's been so nice of being here for the two short weeks that I've been in New York is I've seen friends.
You remembered that you have so many friends that like you.
It's been really nice. It's like that's like going to these parties and like I've been here for a week and I've like not been home. Like I've been home maybe a night.
Like yeah, I barely feel saw like you.
I've been gone and then I work in the day. So it's like, but yeah, I think like it does make me look forward to the moment that it should, what I want to say out loud so that I tell myself that is that once I land somewhere, it will be okay. And those relationships will be back. And I think that's also like the
riding a bike.
Yeah.
When you're good friends with people.
There's not going to be any on-ramp.
It's going to be like, boom. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be instantaneous.
Yeah.
It always is when you're back. I just think it's one of those things that I think it'll feel really nice for everybody to know you're going to stick around for a little while.
Yeah. Especially me.
That I'm going to tell you a story.
Okay. You're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Cream.
I'm Q Dog.
Hey, Q Dog. I'm Carrie Ip Dog Ipama. Woof woof. Do we have Patreons? Do we have more than one? Okay, wow. Hey, guys, we don't have any Patreons.
That hurts.
Ow.
That, ow. You know what? I'm not going to lie. That one really fucking hurts. I'll double check.
Ow.
Is it possible I missed someone?
Ow.
Nope.
Shit.
You guys really? Hey, all right. Here I go.
Every time a new person signs tell you, up, I'm always like, again? This is great. Every time. It's always a nice little boost to my serotonin. Okay.
Let's always like, should we quit? No, somebody new just signed up. Let's keep doing it.
Every time, just so you know, when someone doesn't sign up, we think about quitting. Just think about it. Just for your little brain.
And that, if your question is, are you threatening me? The answer is
yes. We are.
So I only read one thing for this out of sheer laziness, but also because it was a really good article. It was in Outside Magazine and it was by Rachel Mabe and it's awesome. So I want to tell you about this mountaineering instructor named Jim Harris. He also does nature photography. So he's a darling of Outside Magazine, I'm sure. They're like, you're cool. You do sportsy stuff. You love nature. In November of 2014, he is doing something called snow kiting in Chile. What can that mean? Is that picture? Oops, it's like you're trying to grab. Did you like what I said? Chile?
I really liked it.
You guys, we went to my kids' back to school night, and both of their teachers they're in dual language classes. So the teachers speak a bunch of Spanish, and then I just listen, and I'm like, I think I caught 50% of it, and I get really excited. And then I'm like, I gotta learn Spanish, and then I say Chile, and I think, have I already learned it
halfway through? It was really cool to see a school, and I really loved seeing because I was watching them or helping out, and it was.
And
really
yes,
cool.
If you're wondering, did Carrie go to your kids' back to school night? Yes, she did. Thank you for asking.
It did seem funny. It was like, are they in a throuple? What's going on?
We like people to wonder.
What's that strange woman with your children doing here? Weird. But it was really sweet to see like parents who were taking notes. I saw that. It was a teacher who was speaking Spanish to a parent who didn't speak English. It was very, it just felt really cool to be in a school, and that rhymed, but it felt really cool to be in a space that like had so much different representation and so many different, like it was really, it felt powerful in a lot of ways to me. That's all.
I was psyched about it myself. I'm not going to lie. So this story, I don't know what snow kiting is, but imagine there's like an ice field. And what I think is that it's like you catch the wind with your kite and you're on skis and it's like pulling you and you're
it's like parasailing.
Doing a mixture of flying up through the air and then landing and skiing and the kite's pulling you. I feel like I've seen Instagram videos of this. You guys probably have too. Mm-hmm. And Jim Harris is a very athletic guy and does this kind of stuff all the time. But at one point, a really big gust of wind pulls him up and he's like, ooh, okay, this is like higher than I imagined I would go. But then he's getting really low and he's low enough that he said he had to tuck his knees because he didn't want to catch his ankle on the ground and hurt his limbs. And then he's like, I can move the kite. I know what I'm doing where I'll pull myself down to the ground, but he's not wearing skis. He's wearing his sneakers, not his skis. So if he does that, he'll like, which begs the question, why is it called? I mean, I guess it's snow kiting, but you're just jumping. I don't know. It seems like you should have skis on. There, I said it. The wind ends up slamming him into the ground, breaking his back and paralyzing him.
No. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
So his life has changed a lot, and he is now where he used to be running around and doing all these sports things and doing his nature photography. He's now really focused on rehabilitation. He's in a Chilean hospital for a week, and then he moves to Cincinnati, and they cut into his back and decompress his vertebrae and fuse some of them. I don't know why that's helpful. I'm not a damn doctor, but it is helpful in the sense that after it happens, he can wiggle his toe if he really is thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And then a few weeks later, he can start to engage his quads and even lift his legs a little bit. So this happens in November, and by January, he decides he wants a different doctor. Like his surgeon is like, I think you need to totally be resting for a few more months. And he goes to switch hospitals and go to Denver to see this other doctor that's part of an institution that specializes in these kinds of injuries. What I think he likes about this hospital that he goes to is that they're going to be like, you should push it as far as you can, as far as movement.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. we're not going to run. And that's somebody that I think is really athletic and into sports. That feels more like there's something I can do.
Right.
And, you know, he's got to be fighting
depression,
mental and emotional demons yeah. that yeah. would totally come into play. And you've got to fight those and stay strong to try to rehabilitate. And he's at this new hospital for 5 months, and they're doing a lot of physical therapy and exercise. In short, his right hamstring is totally dead and he can't send it any messages. And it's the thing that's getting in the way of him walking is this pesky old hamstring. So he's not walking, but he's out of the hospital. And a friend is like, do you want to come to this really cool music festival in California with me? The String Cheese Incident is going to be playing. And who could say no to that?
You can't.
So he can't say no to that. So he's going to go to this concert. He can't have any booze because that is not good for your nerve connections. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you know what? I'm going to go. I'm going to listen to music. I'm going to party. He takes his walker and he puts a bunch of cool LED lights on it because cool. he's like, I'm going to celebrate and I'm going to feel good. But he gets there and he doesn't feel good. He feels sad a little bit, a little bummed out. And somebody's like, do you want to take mushrooms? And he's like, you know what? Yes, I do. And he takes mushrooms and he's at this concert and there's a sunset. And while the sunset's happening, he starts to think about, you know, I'm a nature photographer. And a lot of the time, the way that he speaks about it is that he had a relationship to sunsets that in some weird way was elitist because it was about getting the best moment, the best picture. And he realizes that just being on mushrooms, watching the sunset, he's like, I'm just like relaxing in this way that I can just enjoy every bit of it and feel really connected. But at the same time, it's like, it doesn't have to be this really, it can be simpler than I've been making it is sort of the thoughts going through his head. I'm paraphrasing. I don't know what was going through his head, but I read this article and some of the ideas they talked about led me to this belief. He is swaying to the music and he has a scooter. He can rest his legs there and sway, put one leg up and one leg down. And he goes to switch because he can switch which leg he's balancing on. Mm-hmm. And when he goes to switch, he's like, weird. I'm moving my leg in a way that I didn't know I could. And then he pokes at that dead right hamstring and he feels like it tenses. And he's like, Oh my God. Like, this is so crazy. I've been trying to get this muscle to talk to me for months.
Oh my God. Like,
I'm probably imagining this. I'm on drugs. So the next morning he gets up and he's like, is it real? And he pokes it again and he's like, it's real. I feel nerve endings firing in this hamstring. And whatever happened that changed this last night didn't go away when I went to bed. So now we are today, 8 years after this happened, and he can walk. And he says he doesn't like how he walks. He says he looks a little weird. He says he compares himself to Frankenstein, but he just has a cane. And he still can go skiing and he can still mountain bike. So when these muscles are firing, it feels kind of like spasms. And he likes to think that what's happening is that the brain and the muscle are like, and they're building a connection that had been gone. And that's why it feels so weird, like almost, where it's like it's building this thing in this zip-zappy way that wasn't there before. They said in the article they likened it, or he likened it, to a remapping of an area that was cut off. So picture there's like a dead wire between your brain and the
neural
muscle.
Pathways, baby.
And then suddenly it's like electricity. You somehow created that pathway and it feels zappy. There is a 29-year-old orthodontic assistant who lives in North Carolina, who's also paralyzed from the waist down in a motorcycle accident. And she talks about how when she took psilocybin, the same thing happened to her. She didn't like the feeling, which is to say the zappy was very zappy, and it would sometimes like freak her out. But she was like, I'll take the zaps that I don't like a few times a year, because when I take the psilocybin, it's zappy. But the whatever happens to me when I'm on it doesn't go away.
Wow.
Like it has improved my body.
Oh my God.
And it makes it worth it, even though I don't like that feeling. In the past 20 years, there have been a lot of speculative ideas coming from researchers and projects that haven't yielded really specific results yet, but we're beginning to. And a lot of doctors are saying, we think this is really good for your physical and mental health, psilocybin.
Yeah. Wow.
In the early 2000s, there was a guy, Victor Arvanian. He gave paralyzed rats a combo of LSD and neurotrophin 3, which is a protein that helps neurons. And the rats that had that got better more quickly. It was a really big deal in the world of like –
Regenerative medicine? That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then the department was like, we don't want you to use LSD anymore. So it's tricky because they're finding these things and then they're not getting approval in the right places to keep testing it. Take something like TBI, which is traumatic brain injury, and PTSD. We know what that is, post-traumatic stress disorder. Really different. A brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder. One thing is very physical. One thing's very mental.
The effects on the brain are
exactly
not dissimilar.
The things that happen to you when those things happen are anxiety and irritability. The same – they produce the same symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Psilocybin in both cases, I will not say has proven to help, but like it's looking like it's helping. So there are – studies where they've been – they do all kinds of things. There are studies that do big trips, mm-hmm. huge amounts of something, you know, like a whatever you call it, hero's journey or whatever, of something like usually it's psilocybin with CBD. And they do either let's do a bunch of mini trips or one big trip and see what happens. And there are studies that are showing this is an anti-inflammatory, but it doesn't have negative side effects the way that heavier drugs do, or heavier different drugs, more chemical compounds do, because psilocybin is a naturally occurring compound. So is CBD.
This is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I also have seen there's some evidence to show like, I mean, yeah, mental health, right? Like these drugs in used in – maybe
and they're organic compounds. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not negate, you know, like this is not
being LSD made in a factory. Is not an organic
compound. No, LSD is not, but psilocybin and CBD are. Yeah. And a lot of these drugs that we're talking about in these trials, they're combining the two. And the vice president of neurology in a Canadian psychedelic research company was telling the person that wrote this Outsider article that physical therapy, which is what we default to in a lot of these things, and it actually has a ton in common with psilocybin. In fact, he said they're the same, which is kind of a crazy thing to say, but the cells in the brain are really similar to the cells that we have in our spinal cord, and psychedelics are having the same effect on both of them. They're healing the brain. They're healing the body. It's really wild.
That's so – I mean, but it is – I think it's such an incredible –
they're helping rebuild circuitry that's broken. So
that's
if you're
amazing.
Depressed and a circuit's broken in your brain, it's firing on a circuit that hasn't been fired on, and it's doing the same thing in a spinal cord.
That's incredible, because I know like there are people that are using ketamine too to help rebuild neural pathways as well. Like mm-hmm. there's some
– I don't know anything about that, but
– I don't know much about it.
This article
I do know that
had
people
me really sold on – psilocybin.
I mean, I think I think there's a lot of anecdotal evidence. I think, you know, at this point, people aren't going for it. I think because of mm-hmm. the stigma around these drugs, right?
I mean, Colorado's really heavily into it. Like they've got Proposition 122, which is the natural
is it up for
Health Medicine Act.
Is it a new?
It would decriminalize the use of using psychedelics, and it would allow clinicians to use them.
Is this up for
and it would allow people to use them medically or recreationally.
Is this up for without vote? Any... Is this up for a vote this year?
Yeah. I think
that's
it's up for vote next month or not next month, 2 months in November.
That's really, well, next month, I think when this episode comes out, that's really,
yeah,
that's really cool. I do think like I've had friends that have done, you know, psychotropic drugs as forms of therapy under guided use, mm-hmm. and it's been life changing for them in a lot of ways. And so, I mean, also like, what are we doing? Like, oh, the other thing is there's also like, remember that, I think it was a while ago I mentioned it, but there was like a study where it was like, what's the best for mental health or depression, and dancing was like really high up in terms of like just dancing is really good for depression. Uh-huh. And it's like, just if it might be more effective than like SSRIs. And I'm not saying like dance your way to sanity or dance your way to feeling okay, as obviously like mm-hmm. medical interventions are very valuable. And that's not me adding a stigma. I'm just saying like, you know, I just think that's really cool. Dancing, a little shrooms. Let's go to a music festival and cure my depression.
I do think it's interesting because these people that
I just wish there wasn't a stigma. Exactly.
And they didn't see a change where they said, now I need to be on psilocybin all the time so that this part of my body works. That's not how it went. It opened something and it didn't close right afterward. That's why it's so amazing. There's this professional hockey player that has like 2 Stanley Cups and he played forever and he had a billion concussions.
Yeah.
His name is Daniel Carcio. And in 2012, they're like, you have really serious brain injury. What do we call, what was that called?
Traumatic brain, a compounding CTE.
I don't know what it's called. It's that idea. And it's like, this it's is like not football what he was players. Diagnosed with, but it's the, yeah, it's like the football
it's
player
really,
thing.
That's where, fucking scary. That's terrifying.
It's terrifying. My friend Liz, who's a nurse, wants to talk to us about it on the podcast sometime.
Oh my gosh.
I should have her do that.
I would love to, because it's absolutely so fucking
Liz, are you
tragic.
Listening? We'll call you. He was like a young guy and he was having his first baby and stuff. And he was having all these suicidal thoughts and he couldn't even go outside. He was just like in a very, very bad place. And he does all this testing and they're like, your body is fucked. Like your testosterone's super low. Like you're an old man. Your cortisol levels are super fucking high. And he's trying everything to fix it because he wants to be there for his wife and his new baby. And in 2019, one of his teammates is like, you want to do this? I'm going to go do this like psilocybin ceremony on a biochemist's farm. And he's like, okay, I'll try anything. Like, sounds interesting. And he goes and does a huge dose. And he has this trip that's very therapeutic for him emotionally, mm-hmm. where he's confronting his health concerns during the trip. And whatever he goes through emotionally and therapeutically afterwards, it changes him. And he had slurred speech. He doesn't anymore. He wants to go out. Wow. He wants to be with his family. It mentally changed him. And once this happened, he was like, now I believe in this and I'm going to be doing it in really low doses here and there with CBD. Like I'm going to microdose it. And he starts microdosing it after the big trip. And then 6 months after he's had this big trip and been microdosing, his brain scans are back to normal. His cortisol is back to normal. Like he healed his body. And so he starts Wasana Health, which is a psychedelic company. And the goal is to like try to market psilocybin to people because he's like, this is life changing.
Also like there is – It sounds like a lot of anecdotal, nothing is proven, but the thing is it's helped people. And I think that's really
it's
fucking,
hard to
especially,
get funding to prove
it's hard.
The things.
Yeah. Well,
I listened to a really good podcast about psychedelics that Brittany sent me the other day. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really fascinating and in support of all this as well. And talking to a psychedelologist. I really don't know if that's a word, but I think that is. And the name of the podcast is Ologies. Look it up. Okay. And she does all ologies. So it's very, very cool podcast. And she was great and highly interesting. And the podcast itself is a 2-parter. I've only listened to part one, but it was about this guy that studies this and
that's
he's
so
very realistic about it and talking about the healing properties it has for bodies, the healing properties it has for depression. and also just people like living up to their potential and wanting to explore that. And it sounds hippy dippy, but the more you listen to this guy, totally a medical professional, it was wildly interesting.
I've also heard anecdotally stories of people doing psilocybin in large doses and it fucking with their digestive tract, right? Like I'm just saying it's interesting. I think that's why you need to it's a balancing thing. Cause I think sometimes
on this podcast, they're not all there to say, go out and do a big trip. He talks about, you want to go get your heart checked, because we know that we're talking about like these electric spasms happening in your body. And they've seen where an old person is like, I want to try a hero's dose. I've never done it before. And they do it at 75. They don't know that they have heart problems because they've never manifested and they die. Yeah. So it's not to say be irresponsible and run and go do something right now.
No, but it just sounds like it's like it unlocks part of your brain.
It'd be great for it to be decriminalized and allowed in a clinical setting, because that would make it much easier. But even if it's not, you can still go to your doctor and say, this is my intention in using this. I want to make sure I'm safe. Can you check my heart and my blood pressure before I try it? You know, you can do some of your own due diligence regardless.
That's amazing. It also just is exciting because it seems like it's changed people's lives for the better. And that's amazing.
We love a changed life for the better.
Well, after this message, if we have one, I'm about to talk about a changed life for the worse.
Okay. You're learning.
So I got this information from The Worst Roommate Ever, a TV show on Netflix, as well as Seattle Times. I'm taking you around Seattle, Washington, and the area and suburbs around it. So the first thing I want to do is tell you about our girl, Shelly Morgan. Shelly Morgan is moving to Seattle, and she's looking for a place to stay and live because she needs to look for a job. She needs to look and she's trying to find a place that is affordable that she can move into with her dog, okay? So she moves into Michael Dudley's home in, 2018. She describes him as a little bit geeky. He's in his late 50s, early 60s. He has a little baby chihuahua that he doesn't put on leash, but follows him around wherever he goes. One thing she said that I think you'd appreciate, and that's something that you also provide, is a well-stocked kitchen. And when she gets there, she doesn't have a car and she has all these interviews places, and he actually offers to drive her around, which is really nice. And so they have these long car rides together. So they're chatting. He has a very dry sense of humor. And one night, the two of them they're taking a walk with their dogs. His chihuahua is off leash and they're walking around the neighborhood and the dog is missing. And they're like, huh, where's the dog? So they start calling out to this little chihuahua named Duke. And this guy is like, I have your dog. He was run over and he died immediately. And so it's horrible. Michael goes and sees his little chihuahua and he's no longer alive. He's dead. And so they go back home and he's like, I just want to spend some time with this dog. So she sees him go to his bedroom and he sleeps with the deceased dog that night. And she's like, okay. She has a background in psychology and stuff. And she's like, this is a interesting trauma response, but okay. And then it goes on for a couple more nights and she's like, okay, this isn't healthy. Like, you will need to grieve him.
Like, I don't want to be all up in your business, but I'm going to need to take that dog.
And he's like, I'm just not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. And so he puts the dog in the freezer. So Shelly has since moved out, but she remembers this moment. And her dad in 2019, her dad gets sick and she has to leave Seattle to go visit her dad and take care of him. And she has two dogs and she can't take her dogs with her. So she's panicking. She can't find a place. So she calls Michael Dudley and she's like, can you please watch my dogs? And he's like, yes, I got you. Don't worry about it. He's texting her pictures of the dog. Everything is going well. And it's like every owner's worst nightmare. Late November, he texts her. He's like, both dogs escaped. And she's like, oh my God, they are gone for 2 weeks. She's texting him. She's with her dad who's dying. And she's like, please find my dog. She's torn in so many different directions, but these dogs are her life. There's Ringo and Pepper. they are chipped, but they don't have collars on, so people can't get a hold of them. And good news happens is that he texts her. He's like, we found Ringo. Ringo had been found by someone on the street and they were able to match him up. So Ringo is like so excited to be back in the home, but Pepper is still not there. And so after 2 months, or around 2 months, she returns to Seattle to go pick up the dogs, and she's reunited with Ringo, and she's so happy, but she still is missing Pepper. It's very sad. And so she's in Michael's house and she has a drink with him, and Michael comes in with a hen in his hand. And
a hen,
like holding a chicken.
Like a chicken. Okay. Mm-hmm. A live chicken.
A live chicken. And she kind of looks at him and she's like, something's not right here. Something feels off.
Wait, you're hearing yourself, right? Can you imagine that you're at somebody's house and they're like, I'm going to go get you a drink, and they come back in with a drink and a hen, and your next thought is, something's not right here.
Yeah. Something, I mean, were any lies it's detected?
Like, to say the least.
To say the least. And she's like, what happened? And he just goes, I killed Pepper. Because he killed her baby, referring to the hen. And she's like,
what
the fuck is going on? This is fucking weird. What did you do to him? And he's like, Austin, this guy who's living with him. He's like, Austin and I cremated him. So she grabs Ringo and she fucking books it out of there. And she's like, get me the fuck out of there. Okay.
Terrifying.
So flash forward. It is June 2019. And TikTok, we love to see it. There's some kids on TikTok who are like hanging out by the rocks or by the bay of Seattle, and they see this like duffel bag and this suitcase wash ashore. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh my God, what if there's money in it? And they're filming everything because they're teenagers. They're filming it. And they're like, ooh, what's going on in here? And so they take the suitcase, and this is all on TikTok, all in a video. They start opening the suitcase, and when they open it up, they smell a horrific stench. And they're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. They call 911. 911 comes in. Your worst fears are confirmed. It is, in fact, a body. And not just one body, two bodies. They start to look at the duffel and the suitcase, and they see two heads in there. They see bagged body parts. And they notice that the victims, the heads, one is a woman and one is a man's head. And they're able to fingerprint them. And they find out that it is Austin Wenner and Jessica Lewis.
Who?
So they're trying to figure out who these people are, right? And so they look at the evidence that they have, and they find another place where there's another bag of body parts washed ashore. And so they're able to compile what happened to Jessica, but they don't have enough body parts of Austin to piece what happened to him. But they see that Jessica was shot at least four times, and they go to inform Austin and Jessica's family. And in this documentary, in this Worst Roommate Ever, they interview her family, or no, they interview both their families, but they interview his mom, and she finds out her son is dead. And what's crazy is this TikTok video went viral weeks before, and they even put it on the news. And she remembers watching the news, and she's like, turn the news off. It's too dark. I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this. And then she finds out that it was her son who washed ashore, and she had no idea.
Oh.
And she had been looking for her son and his girlfriend for a while. They had been missing. They start to look at what was going on with this couple. They learn that they have been living at Michael Dudley's house. Now, a little bit of information about the couple. They met when he was 20 and she was in her late 20s in 2014. A little bit about them is Austin was like a very adventurous person, and he was totally in love with Jessica. Jessica, a little bit about her, is her grandma had an adult family home, and Jessica would go in and she would help. She would paint the residents' nails. She would go and help her grandma. Austin, they describe him as a very sensitive person. And something you should know about these two is that they were active drug users and then went in and out of rehab, both of them. Austin spent a huge part of his life on drugs, and both him and Jessica would use together. And in doing so, they experienced homelessness and housing insecurity, and they needed a place to stay. And Austin's aunt was actually staying with Michael Dudley, like in a trailer on his property. And she was able to get him a place in his home, like the bedroom that Shelley lived in, they lived in. It's like the blue bedroom, but it was like very affordable. They could live there. They had food, you know, they had a roof over their head, right? And so by the time they die, Jessica's 35 and Austin is 27. But while they lived with Michael,
so young.
Incredibly young, they moved into Michael's place around October 2019. And part of the deal was Jessica would help clean the house and Austin would help with cars. And they noticed that in the basement, Shelley would talk about this, is that he had like two big computer stations. And also around the house, there was cameras everywhere. And so Michael always knew what was going on at his house. And so he was pretty controlling to his tenants, to Austin and Jessica. They would need permission to do anything, including if their family came over. They were like, hey, if you come over, just have to ask permission. Also want to make sure we're not here for long, because he'll keep stock of who's here and for how long. Austin starts to get into doing some nefarious things for Michael. Like, he asks them to steal cars, and I don't think he's that forthcoming with his family about that. But what we will find out is that Michael Dudley is also using drugs, and he essentially is holding this roof quite literally over Austin and Jessica's head and asking them to do nefarious things. Austin would tell his mom that he saw Michael kill a puppy, which is my assumption is what happened to Pepper.
Yeah.
And that's, and I don't know if you remember, Michael had said that him and Austin cremated the dog. He also said that him and Jessica were home and they saw Michael unloading like a bunch of guns from a car, and they think they weren't supposed to see it. And so Austin went to his uncle's house and he's like, we got to get out of here. His family was like, are you still safe to stay there? He's like, yeah, it's fine. It's fine. And this is at the beginning of the pandemic. So as you know, people can't really leave. Him and Jessica are stuck there. I think also probably because they don't have a ton of money, and it's very hard to leave a place, even if it's a shitty living circumstances and frankly, fucking dangerous. But again, they're really stuck between a rock and a hard place. And in May of 2021, he even tells his uncle, you know, if you don't see us again, you know who did it. It's June 16th, 2020, and Austin's mom tries calling him, and there's no answer. And this is not very rare, because Austin would often sell his phone or lose his phone. And so she knew to call Jessica. Jessica always had her phone, but there was no answer. They call Michael Dudley. They're like, where's my kids? I don't know where they are. He's like, they moved out and they left the place a mess. And she's like, okay, if my kids left, I'll come over. I'll come and help you clean it up. And he's like, no, never mind. No need to come. Her husband, they were not together, came to the Dudley house, came to Michael's house. And he was like, I'm looking for my son. And he's like, yeah, he left it a mess and I'm cleaning it up. And his dad gets a weird feeling and is like, sees his son's clothes by the dumpster. And he's like, why is his clothes here? And Michael Dudley's like, well, he left them there. And his dad is like, I know those are his clothes because I bought him those clothes. And he wouldn't have left with like the only thing he owns. He wouldn't have left without it. This is when a couple days later is when the suitcase is found. That TikTok video is made. And not long after, they inform the family that the bodies in that are in fact Jessica and Austin. They now know that May 29th, 2020 is the last time anyone saw these two people alive. And what's really fucking crazy is that the police were able to see where they were living. And again, they see that Michael Dudley has a history of drugs and meth, using methamphetamines and crack cocaine. And what's fucking crazy is June 9th, 2020 at 7:15, there is a 911 call from Michael Dudley's neighbors to 911 saying, hey, we heard gunshots and screaming and people calling for help. 30 minutes later, they call 911 again and they say they're still screaming, asking for help. Someone's begging to leave. So the police go over there. The police knock and there's no answer. And the police don't have anything else to go on. And so they just fucking leave. So investigators at this point are able to pinpoint, oh, we think that's when the crime happened, which I'm just looking at this and it makes me so angry because we could have, it sounds like if they had come at 7:15 and rushed over there, maybe, they could have stopped him. They would still be alive. They don't really get into it in the documentary, but I'm like, it's very strange that they have this and they hear gunshots and people screaming and that's not enough probable cause to like enter a home and do a wellness check. But that's, keep in mind.
Yeah, what the fuck?
It's fucked. And what's crazy is Michael Dudley has cameras everywhere. So like that's the other thing is like they don't ask to see footage or anything. There's no commentary about what happened to the footage, if it was recorded, anything. And so I also think too is I'm curious if there's a little bit of like the COVID of it all because this is in May of 2020. And it's like maybe they don't want to enter because they're worried people have COVID. I don't know. But it seems like people are just like not following through. Mm-hmm. The police are able to get a search warrant on Jessica's phone and they find that the last day it was on was May 29th. So they believe that this is the day that he murdered them, that he shot them both. Mm-hmm. They were able to find a woman who is currently living in Michael Dudley's home and they changed her voice and her eyewitness testimony is secret. And what's interesting about her is that she has a long history of drug-related crimes, whether it's robbery or drug use. And so she talks to the police and she says, when I walked in, I saw a body. I saw Michael Dudley. His glasses are broken and he's super scratched up when she went to go move into the house where he said that he had tenants who were leaving. Mm-hmm. And she said she walked into the room and she saw underclothes bodies with their arms sticking up. But she continued to stay at his home. And in the room that she was staying in was like, I think this is someone who was in dire straits. It doesn't sound dissimilar to Jessica and Austin, who are like in desperate need of a home. And they stayed there because they didn't have any other options. So this woman who was staying there, she was in the room that they were in. It was repainted. She saw bullet holes in the dresser. And so on August 19th, 2020, they were able to arrest Michael Dudley and charge him with homicide. And they have some of the footage of him in the room denying it. And they were able to get forensics into the room. Again, it was repainted, but they were able to find actual bullets behind the wall because the room was repainted. They were able to find some bullet track marks, whether it was on the bed or on the dresser. They also found blood spatter. They also were able to locate Michael Dudley's phone and it followed where the packages, the body parts were dropped off. It followed that pattern. Mm-hmm. He went to trial in 2022. After a 2-month trial, the jury deliberated 1.5 days. And I think part of it was they also didn't know how Austin died because they didn't have his body. They could only sort of...
Yeah.
But he was found guilty and he was sentenced to 46 years in prison and he won't be eligible for parole until he is 104 years old. So he will spend the rest of his life in jail. And it was interesting. You had the detective on the case who was talking about it in early 2023 and talking about how he feels like he's failed the family because he hasn't found the rest of Austin and he just wants to return Austin to his family, his whole body. Mm-hmm. And in 2023, they did find some more of Austin's body parts in a forest. And so his family was able to get his remains. In terms of motive, I don't know the motive. My assumption, it's an argument that went awry, but it feels like he killed them in cold blood. And it just blows my mind that he was a person that people were around and this happened.
Yeah, I just wonder. It feels like it like escalated very quickly.
Yeah, I think it's too is they had talked about him having a daytime self and a nighttime self. Like he doesn't look like an active drug user. Like he looks like an old man having this chihuahua. It just feels like there's a little bit of like a switch, even just like how Shelly talked about him when she moved in and he's like, I'll drive you around. Like Shelly's experience living there versus this couple's experience lived there feels so profoundly different because she was a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I don't know which one she is, Shelly, but it seemed like he was a bit of a weirdo, but it worked for her. And he had the moment of like the dog in the freezer. He had the moment of like killing her dog in 2019. Like, it does feel like an escalation. And
that's what I mean, though. It's like he went from like, I'm sad my dog died and put it in the freezer, to I'm murdering your dog.
And that was in 2019.
Which feels like a huge jump. And then the next jump is people.
Yeah. In 2020. Yeah. She met him in 2018. That was within 2 years that he murdered people. I wonder if it was like drug use. And they had said that like a lot of people who use drugs have a lot of cameras around their house because of like maybe lack of trust. But it felt like he was watching everyone, spying on them, super controlling. Yeah. And it just, it breaks your heart too, because these two young people were so young, and my heart goes out to them and their families, because it seemed like they were really struggling with addiction and their family couldn't take them in. But this man took advantage and senselessly killed them after he made them steal cars for him. And I think he used with them. I think that was part of the allure too, is that they were all using together.
Yeah.
Michael Dudley.
What a sad story, Carrie.
Rotten jail. Really horrible. Well, I do want to say, I do want to call attention to Austin being an adventurous, loving person who loved Jessica, and Jessica who helped her grandma out and was a ray of sunshine, and her family knew her spirit and knew how positive she was.
Mm-hmm.
What do I want to say now? What I want to say now is, I'm going to leave on a plane and see my family. For a long time. And what's exciting is my dad had surgery yesterday and it went well.
I'm really glad.
That's exciting.
We needed that win.
We need a little good. And it was really funny. I'll tell you this much because it makes me laugh. And I actually want to find the exact – hold on. Let me go to my – so my dad is the best. I love my dad. He's an amazing person. We don't always agree on things, but that's what families are for. You know what I mean?
Not agreeing on things.
Not agreeing. You don't want to agree on things. You don't want to agree on things. You got to have a little bit of discourse. You know what I mean? We love to see it. Anyway, my dad sent an email to the family going, it just was titled D-Day before he got his surgery.
Harry?
Literally, right. His surgery was scheduled at 11 o'clock. We got an email at 11 a.m. and he said, thanks for all your support in getting me to this day. I love you. Very so sweet. Brutal. Does feel like it does hurt your heart a little bit, because every time you're like, is this it? Is this the story I'm going to tell? Is this the email I'm going to hang my fucking hat on? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
It would make you feel the exact same way, wouldn't it? Or no?
How did you feel?
I felt like I was like, I had to talk myself down. I had to go, Carrie, he's okay. He's done how many fucking surgeries? It's going to be okay. And if it's like, what will be, will be. You worrying about it isn't going to change anything. You're reading too much into this email entitled D-Day from your father.
It's going to be okay. Don't send your kids emails like that as my public service announcement.
No. You know what though? I do love having an email from my dad that says, I love you. I'll take that. But yeah, it does feel like a D-Day title. He's also been – my poor dad's had some health stuff this year. And so I do think there was a little bit – we are on the road. We are looking up. We are feeling positive, which is exciting. I think that was him feeling positive. Thank you for getting me to this day. God love him. He's already made requests on what I'm going to make him when I'm back in town. So I have
– oh, good. Then we know he's feeling better.
Which I love. Yeah. All right. Well,
can you come in here so I can show you some Airbnb content that I want to ask about?
Yeah, of course. Should I stop recording?
Oh, yeah. You guys can't see, so you can't offer an opinion.
But